Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and this episode is a four questions episode with Eric DePriester. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Jeff.
All right, so we just, if you listened to the podcast before this one, you got to hear Eric talk all about his film Treason, which you can watch on Tubi, or you can watch on iTunes or Prime Video if you want to step up and pay for the film. You should. But this episode, instead of talking about Eric's past and what brought him into filmmaking, we are going to just have Eric answer the Discover Indie Film four questions, which are favorite films of all time, a film that is underrated, a film that is overrated, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. And I didn't warn you, Eric, but you'll see me typing as you answer because I try to type your answers as you say them. But please, go ahead. Tell us your favorite films.
Absolutely. And you said I got a limit of three. Can I say a couple honorable mentions real quick, or do I check?
Hell yeah. There's actually the referee, you know, has blinders on, so you can name as many. Yeah, you can go for it.
Okay. So I've got a top five of movies that I pruned to a top three, but the top three is, that's the strongest. But I would say Graduate number one with a bullet. No questions. It's just I've watched that movie more than almost anything. I know it by heart. It's perfectly shot. It's perfectly scored. The acting is incredible. The writing is incredible. The visual language of that movie is just so just stupidly good. Like Mike Nichols, it's casually gorgeous. Like it's so unassuming that the first time you watch it, it doesn't seem that beautiful, and it's just every frame is a painting. Like it's a perfect movie. I can watch The Graduate every day. I love that movie.
I'm with you 1,000%. That's in my top three. I think it's perfect cinema in every way.
And like, you know, there's, you know, like Dustin Hoffman and hindsight, there's some things about the way he acts on set with, you know, it's colored by that, but the art itself, that film is just, it's beautiful, beautiful art. And I think it's representative overall. In the last conversation, we were talking about the divide between comedy and drama and how my favorite films exist in both worlds. And that's The Graduate. It's a dramatic comedy or comedic drama. But whatever it is, it's life. It's got a little bit of everything. So to take things in a very different direction, a little more operatic, a lot crazier, and I think representative of another part of my taste, would be number two, would be 28 Days Later. And I've always liked zombie movies. I always liked horror movies growing up. And actually 28 Days Later was the first screenplay I ever read, because I was a fan of Alex Garland, the writer, from his novels. And then Danny Boyle had previously adapted The Beach as a movie. And I heard him and Danny Boyle were doing 28 Days Later and read the script before the movie even came out. Loved it, and it just, to me, it is, first of all, it's a very smart zombie movie where it's in the tradition of Romero, where it's an actual cultural commentary in addition to be a horrifying movie. So that's good. It's intelligent. It's building to something. It has something to say. But then the style of the film is just gritty, but it's beautiful. It's all that handheld, but it's not overly jittery. Like it didn't, you know, I think we went too far in the mid-2000s with the handheld and just got way too much. 28 Days Later is like the perfect usage of that. The score was great. I'm blanking on the name of the composer. And then Cillian Murphy, introduction of one of my favorite modern actors. And Danny Boyle killing it on the direction job. Like I just, that is a, and that third act where Cillian Murphy is breaking into the house where the soldiers are at, it's just, just burned into my memory. I can't not. Like it's just, one of the most visceral and gripping movies I've ever seen. And you know, introducing fast zombies, which was a huge leap.
I think Danny Boyle is an underrated genius. Yep. I think, and it could be because he has dabbled in every possible genre. Yep. But I think I'll go see anything he does. I don't care if it's rom-com or horror or drug-fueled. If he's helming it, it's worth my time.
And it's not always great, but it's always interesting. Yep, big fan of Danny Boyle.
Absolutely.
Yep. Number three, and again, this is a big switch, but I think again representative of my taste and my overall style. Number three would be Anchorman: The Legend of Ron Burgundy. It's just, I think the funniest movie I've ever seen. I've seen it however many times, hundreds of times, and I still just laugh like a stupid person every time I see it. And Will Ferrell's commitment to the bit is unparalleled. Like he plays the boar so incredibly well. The supporting cast is amazing. You have Adam McKay interjecting enough little social criticism that there's some meat there. It's just a wonderfully silly movie. Always cheers me up. I love that movie.
Absolutely. Hey, the question was favorite films.
Yep.
So, and I mean, to Anchorman, who's not going to mention that Anchorman might be the most quotable film of all time?
Absolutely.
Who doesn't throw in the comment, whale's vagina, and I love lamp, and there's so many moments in that are just out of left field hilarious, like they shouldn't be funny, and they are.
Absolutely. What I think if I had made this list even 5 years ago, I would have been more like, well, Goodfellas is objectively a better film than Anchorman, so I should have Goodfellas in my top five. Who cares? I love Goodfellas. It's a masterpiece, don't get me wrong, but I have seen Anchorman more than almost any other movie, so it belongs in my top five. It's what you like the most.
Absolutely. All right, so what's your fourth?
Number four, another movie that I've just seen more than almost anything. I mentioned my love of John Cusack movies in the last pod, Gross Point Blank. Just a absolutely perfect romantic comedy, perfect dark comedy. It walks that line of maybe you should be offended or maybe you should be horrified, but it's actually hilarious. There's good action. There's just an amazing 80s soundtrack. But really what it comes down to, and the supporting cast is amazing. You have Alan Arkin, you have Jeremy Piven, Dan Aykroyd, Hank Azaria. It just keeps going on. But what it comes down to is John Cusack and Minnie Driver with just ridiculous chemistry. And just those two being stupid charming and having a lot of just really witty banter and being super delightful on screen.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we got similar tastes. What can I say? You're nailing a lot of favorites of mine, and John Cusack and I think, I mean, we're about the same age. So, I mean, I grew up with that fucker. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to express just how perfectly he captured my generation's existence, you know, right from the high school stuff right up until, you know, Hot Tub Time Machine. What can I say?
Totally. And even as a person who graduated high school in 05, like watching Better Off Dead and Say Anything spoke to me, you know, even 20 years later, like it's just, yeah, he really tapped into something universal.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. You promised us one more. You said you were going to do top five.
Yep. And to continue, more representative of my taste, love Westerns, and Clint is my favorite Western hero, so it feels kind of like a betrayal not to have a Clint movie here. But you just, how do you pick one? Is it Good the Bad? Is it Outlaw Josie Wales? Is it High Plains Drifter? It's just, they're all great, but none are quite as consistently amazing as Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Just, you know, what can you say about it? It's just one of the most delightful things ever put on film. That Paul Newman and Robert Redford are amazing together. Catherine Ross is an amazing foil for them. The direction is great. The script by William Goldman is one of the best ever written. The score, Burt Bacharach, is fantastic. It's just, you know, it's another just perfectly done movie where it's got adventure and romance and comedy and pathos. It's got literally every emotion you would want in a film. Like, it's just, and I was able to see it, you know, AMC does those revival nights every now and then. I was able to see it on the big screen 4 or 5 years ago. And yeah, it's one of the best adventures ever on film.
Yeah, absolutely. That was back when they pulled no punches.
Yep.
Like golden era of cinema in a way in the 70s. I actually saw that film in the theater when it was first released. My parents took us because they probably just didn't want babysitters. So I didn't even know why I was watching it, but man, that movie was so good.
Yeah,
for sure. All right. Very nice list. Very good. So balanced. All right. Well, here comes a fun one, a film you think is underrated.
Okay. So I feel like I've been wanting to have this conversation for a long time. When I walked out of this movie, I had seen no reviews, no press. Initially, I was like, is this a masterpiece? Is this director's best work? I'm so excited to have this conversation. And then no awards love, very little critical love. The audience response was one of the worst audience responses that's been recorded. The film is Darren Aronofsky's Mother. And I don't know. I walked in thinking, again, I think I'd seen a couple previews. So I thought it was going to be Jennifer Lawrence in something that was vaguely a horror. And that was pretty much all I knew. And I got Javier Bardem, I knew some of the supporting cast, and that was it. So like the first half, just a well-composed and kind of creepy little Jennifer Lawrence walking through the house and just nice atmosphere. And everything was well shot, but nothing too spectacular. But the second half of the movie, when it just turns just straight into crazy town and just throws every ounce of biblical imagery that you can possibly summon and then just twists it inside out and just really, like, talk about feeling something viscerally. Like, that just, I felt gross and disturbed when all the excitement in the back half is happening, it was a nonstop roller coaster. I felt so much. And, I thought it was a very interesting, my initial read, it was a very interesting, examination of art and, muse and the toll that it takes on relationships and basically the, what a creator does to his creation and to the ones around him in the process of creation. And it seemed like just amusing on the artistic process, and the inherently destructive nature of that process. And, then you hear these interviews and it's for Darren Aronofsky, it was very explicitly about climate change and our responsibility as humans and our actions as humans, which I 100% see. Like, I can definitely see that reading. It was a totally gripping, really well done work of art that made me feel deeply and react and have a very different interpretation. But, I thought it was art, capital A art, just like a thing to be discussed and taken seriously. And we should have different readings of, and we should do a feminist reading of, we should have these interpretations. And the cultural response was, that's kind of gross. Somebody tore up a baby. I'm not interested. And it just felt very juvenile. And it was like a horde of Jennifer Lawrence fans went into a theater and got disappointed and took it out on Darren Aronofsky. I don't know. Maybe he is a fringe artist. Like, he makes weird, dark, disturbing movies. So maybe it's a miracle that he ever had any mainstream recognition in the first place. Like, Black Swan I rewatched that recently. It's a beautiful film, wonderfully done, but it's insane. It's a very jarring psychological film. So, maybe those sorts of films are the exception and Mother is more the rule, where he's just going to make these weird indie outliers. But, I felt very disappointed. I thought the film, it deserved more conversation.
I'll just confess, the reviews kept me from seeing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm a fan of his. I don't love everything he does, but I'm a fan of the fringe stuff. In fact, my life partner who I sleep next to, our first date in 1996 was to Pie.
The hell of a first date.
Yeah. Wait, was it 96? I think it was 96.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, took her to Pie because I was like dying to see it. So,
yeah.
I think that film's perfect. But yeah, so okay, we got to watch Mother.
It's not a perfect film, right? It's ugly, it's messy. I don't think it fully comes together, but I do think it is it's something worth investigating, worth exploring. Just, yeah, I think he really did something interesting and novel. And, yeah, I was disappointed by the, because almost everybody, film friends included, had the exact same thing of just the collective response was bad. So they never saw it. And,
And it might have been, it's funny because Jennifer Lawrence, I do think, is excellent. Yeah. But yeah, she was a bit of an it girl. And then the fact that they hooked up got more press than
there's that backlash.
Film. Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that we get biased about things. But so thank you for making it your underrated. All right, now, are you going to have some fun with your overrated?
I think so. I've tested this out on some friends before. I've had this opinion for a while. And it usually, well, some people understand it. I get a lot of frowns and a lot of just how could you from it. Shawshank Redemption. My hottest take of this, if it was just the most inflammatory version of my problem with it, it's like if you took Cool Hand Luke, which is one of my favorite movies, brilliant. I'm obsessed with Paul Newman, if you couldn't tell. You take Cool Hand Luke and you wash all of the grit and all the reality and all of the life out of it, and you just have like this schmaltzy story of brotherhood behind bars that was made for TV. Even before, like, it was made to be shown on TNT nonstop throughout my childhood on the night. And, like, it's just, I know that's not, it was made for the theater, but, like, it just, that was its destiny. It doesn't really say that much, and I'm being too harsh on it now. Like, it is a good film, right? It was shot by arguably the best cinematographer ever and Roger Deakins, right? Like, you still have great performances by Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman. Frank Darabont still does a good job with everything. Like, it's a well-made film and everything, but I see it as closer to Green Book, where it's a competently made film where there's nothing inherently bad about it, but it's raised to such a level, and Shawshank is far better than Green Book, don't get me wrong, but it's been raised to such a level where I'm forced to talk about it like it's a thing bigger than it actually is. Like, Green Book should never have been up for Best Picture. Shawshank should not be on the best 100 movies list, or I guess just, it's a good movie. It's perfectly fine, but don't talk about it with The Godfather. Like, it's just, it doesn't belong in that company.
I mean, I love your answer. I can't. Obviously, tons of people on this podcast have said, have put Shawshank in their top three. Like, people love Shawshank. People, I've admittedly have never gotten what it was about, all the hoopla, all the praise, but yeah, it's a good film. And actually, it's exactly what I always, if sometimes people don't want to answer that question, I'm like, you're actually not casting that much shade. You're not saying this is a bad film. You're saying other people's opinions of it, I think, are outsourced. You could love the film and still think it's overrated.
Yep.
So, fair enough. Shawshank. I think finally, thank you. Someone finally made Shawshank their overrated. I honestly, like, yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Green Mile's not a bad comparison for me.
100%. Yeah.
Now I'll get the hate email too. But
Green Mile's Shawshank Unmasked. It's like culturally everyone saw what we're doing, but it's the same movie.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, one more to go. That's a lesser-known film that people should seek out.
So I debated this one for a while, if I should go totally obscure, like some random Italian movie from 1960 or something that maybe no. But I wanted it to be ideally relevant, too, to Treason, which we had talked about on the last podcast. So my pick for this is Thoroughbreds. Came out in 2017, I believe, written and directed by Corey Finley. And it's starring Olivia Cooke, Anya Taylor-Joy, and Anton Yelchin. And it's just a biting, just wonderful little film. And it wasn't seen by many people. It didn't get a lot of attention. I think now that Anya Taylor-Joy blew up with Queen's Gambit, there might be a little bit more recognition. Corey Finley made a film with Hugh Jackman, Bad Education, so he might be getting a little bit more shine. But it was originally written as a play, and then he adapted it as a movie, which is why I took a lot of inspiration for Treason, just seeing how he built out that world, how he was able to take as essentially a character drama in one house and shoot it interestingly and just keep the audience engaged through his creative choices. But it's a brilliant dark comedy. Like, it's another one of those things where you don't know whether to laugh or be horrified. It's just the central performances, especially Olivia Cooke and Anya Taylor-Joy, are just unbelievable. This was Corey Finley's first movie he directed, and it is so confident, it's so masterful. This is overly high praise that I don't mean this exaggerated, but there's times it looked Kubrickian, where it reminded me of The Shining, and just his framing was just so on point, and not overly showy, not overly symmetrical, but so just subtly gorgeous. And there's one lingering shot. It's a wonder for. God, it feels like it goes on for 5 minutes. It might only be 2 minutes or something, but toward the end of the film, and it's just, you know, I think a lot of directors would go into the bedroom where the action's going on, or they would cut, or they would just be nervous about that, and the confidence to just keep us in that moment and just stay on this beautiful shot and just really let the audience sit in the whole situation. It's unbelievable. So I absolutely love that film. It was a huge inspiration for Treason. And unfortunately, again, I feel like it just kind of got overlooked.
I mean, I haven't even heard of it. So it got overlooked.
Yep.
You happen to know if it's on, I'll try to find it.
I think I saw it was on Netflix pretty recently.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's on one of those services.
There's only a couple jillion things on Netflix to try to sort through.
Exactly.
Excellent. All right, Eric. Good list. Love your answers for all four. Before I jump into my spiel about all the podcasts and TV series and film festival related websites people should check out, what should people check out for you?
Yeah, so we got Treason streaming now on Tubi and available to rent on Prime and VOD and Apple and all those places. We've got a short film, Composure, that's going to be playing festivals next year and ultimately will get online at the end of the year. And you can follow us on social media at Bear Elegance. Bear is the animal and elegance, and we're on Instagram and Twitter.
Excellent. At Bear Elegance. All right. And now we're on the Discovery Indie Film Podcast, and this podcast gave birth to a TV series of the same name. And if you want to learn about either, go to discoverindiefilm.com. And if you're into social media, it's at DIFWINS. And that all came about because I was programming film festivals and wanted to talk to the filmmakers more. Because at the festival, actually, our festival has a nice long 15-minute Q&A that is still not long enough. So for most films, features, we go longer. But and yours, it's always nice to like go past midnight talking about a movie.
Totally.
But so if people want to learn about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, which is where Eric won an award for Treason, go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and on social media it's at ShermanOaksFF. And there is a sister festival that we hold every June. That's Film Invasion Los Angeles. You can learn about it at FilmInvasionLA.com, and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And I forgot. I don't have a note for it. I didn't say this in the last podcast, but I'll say it here. Like the podcast. Give it 5 stars, whatever. Give it a thumbs up. Give it a nice review. Be nice. It doesn't cost you anything to be kind, dear public. If you see Eric's film Treason on Prime, go give it 10 out of 10 or whatever you can. Or is it 5 out of 5? I don't know. But give Treason a kick-ass review. I don't think Tubi has that, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's too bad. And give it a thumbs up anywhere you see it. And while you're at it, yeah, the Discovery Indie Film TV series deserves 5 stars. Why don't you go watch that on Amazon Prime Video? Just search for Discovery Indie Film on Amazon Prime Video. Watch a couple episodes and give it 5 stars, huh? There's 4 seasons, 40 episodes. It's nice stuff. All right. I'm now done slutting myself out for positive reviews. But I can't help it. We live in a review-based world now. So, and I always laugh about the fact, and this is no, I'm not trying to guilt trip you in advance, but there's been over 100 filmmakers on the podcast. And I think the podcast on iTunes has like 15 reviews.
something's not adding up there.
So I can't even get the people who are on it. It's just funny. People are on the podcast, but they don't bother giving it. Yeah, it's kind of funny. What are you going to do? I get a kick out of it. All right. Eric DePriester, it was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I will thank everyone for listening.